For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two gentlemen that I like to call friend.
Good. I'm glad you consider me a friend.
Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Guys, how many friends do you have? Now, I'm not talking Facebook.
Oh man.
Yeah, because that's my
instant go-to. I mean, you ask me that question, all exactly. I have to do is pull out my phone, look, and it'll tell me how many friends I have.
Right. Hundreds.
That's the trick. How many true friends do you have? People that you converse with on a regular basis, people that, you know, if you fell
the number
off,
shrinking.
If you fell off Facebook and didn't go to Facebook for 6 weeks, who would actually be looking for you, picking up the phone and calling you and saying, hey, are you okay? How many friends do you have?
You know, off the top of my head, I mean, there's four guys that come to mind pretty instantly. And then you get beyond that core of four or five buddies, and yeah, it thins
drops
out.
Off.
It does. It thins out. But I guess part of it is, you know, what do you consider a friend? Is a friend just somebody that you would kind of enjoy hanging out with, going to soccer games with,
that kind of thing,
or, you know, I guess a step above, you know, some of those people you'd hang out with. If your sink started leaking catastrophically, they're not the people you would call necessarily because, you know, well, they might have something else they've got to do. Or I guess, you know, plumbing involves a little bit of skill. So maybe moving houses. If you're moving.
You know, yeah. Then anyone can lift the box.
Right. Yeah. Then it starts to narrow down.
He's got a truck.
I do have a truck.
Exactly. But even, you know, even a lot of those people with a truck, suddenly when you're moving, that truck
unavailable.
Is, exactly. Well, it's going to be out of town,
sorry about
so
that,
I can't
Mark.
Help you out. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'll be in Kokomo.
Right.
But I didn't tell you when I was moving. Exactly. I'll be in Kokomo, so, Mark.
Guys, traditionally, you know, there have been definitions of friendship throughout the ages. There have been classic friendships throughout the ages. There have been those friendships that have gone wrong. I mean, you know, Caesar and Brutus, you know, maybe worked, maybe didn't. In the end, not so much. But, you know, we have our friendships of the people we work with, the people we go to church with, the people we live with. I mean, you know, there are times when, you know, honest to God, I love all my kids, but there are days when I don't like some of them. So, you know, are they still my friends? Is family considered friends or is that a different category?
Right. And now, Tim, I'm going to test our friendship a little bit here by bringing in Heidegger.
Gadzooks.
Yeah. No, I think one of the interesting things with the friends, especially as you're talking about them, Kent, is Heidegger talks about how, you know, we sort of interact with the world on an everyday sort of level. We don't think about our interactions, you know, and mainly he's talking about objects. And you know, when you go to the car, you open up the door in the morning.
I don't greet
down,
my car.
You sit down. Yeah, you don't greet your car. You stick the key in the ignition, but you're not thinking about what the car is, how the car works, all of the parts that have to go together. I mean, even mechanics don't think about all of that every day that they go in and sit down at their car. They're dealing with their car on kind of an everyday sort of level. When you go beyond that and you start analyzing, okay, what a little bit deeper into what is this car? How does it work? It's when three things happen. Either your car is broken, either your car is missing, either for some other reason you don't have a car and you need one. And friends are kind of that way too, that in a lot of ways we deal with people that we consider friends on a very everyday, casual sort of level.
Practical.
Going to church, going to work, you know, all of these. And it's not until those friendships get a little bit tried or that friend when you need them isn't there. They're you know, maybe on vacation when you're moving or maybe in Kokomo when you're moving.
or they're bringing up Heidegger.
Right. Or you find yourself lonely. You find yourself in a state where you just don't have any friends. And that's really when you start to I think, kind of recognize the value of friendship, what friendship friendships are, what different types of friendships there are, and really start to kind of analyze it a little bit.
Yeah, and when you don't, and you're right, that pang of loneliness, of that there's something missing. If I don't have friendships in the truest sense, then somehow there's a kind of deprivation that I'm experiencing, right? There's something missing not just only my human experience, but in order for me to flourish, right? In order for any of us to flourish, we need strong friendships and what those are. And, you know, one of the aspects of friendship that come to mind is this idea of kind of free association, right? A friend is there are settings like we've talked about where we're sort of required, if you will, to have contact with other human beings. It sounds really kind of cold and sterile now that I say it out loud. But if you go to, when you go to the workplace, your workplace, you're coming into contact with other, you know, other people, and they're not all your friends, right? The what maybe separates a colleague from a friend, I think one of the features, there's more than this one, but kind of this notion of free association. So when I have discretionary time, whether at work or outside of work, this is someone I would choose to freely associate with.
Right. This is somebody you want to be with, not somebody who you're kind of forced to be with because
of
circumstances.
Or required to be with. Exactly. Yeah. And so that's one element of it. But that also kind of leads into another element, which is that there's a sharing of the will, a sharing of common desires. So we have things in common that we like. We have similar likes, similar interests. And that's the reason why that's one of the reasons why we would form a friendship.
And I think that's one of the things that is taxing friendships these days is, you know, the outside environment around where we have our friendships is becoming more polarized. And as that becomes more polarized in religion and politics, I think it has a lot of strain on our friendships because there's a more narrow range, I think, of where we expect people to agree with us and expect people to have that same will, as you mentioned. And it's becoming narrower and narrower. And so it's harder to find like-minded friends, I guess, to a certain extent, as the world becomes more polarized.
Yeah, to make new friends, certainly. And then with existing friendships, there's... as the stakes get raised in a polarized environment about certain issues, there's probably less willingness to tolerate opposition from those in our circle of friends. There's a point at which you'd say, well, you know what, this is too important of an issue where I'll take an example. Let's say pro-life, right, where it can be a big strain to have a friendship with someone who is pro-choice because it's such a decisive issue, and being on opposite sides of that can make forming a friendship or maintaining a friendship very challenging.
Right. And I think even the news cycle is it's bringing up topics constantly.
Oh yeah.
You know, every time a new a new idea comes up in the news, we want to discuss it with our friends. And so I think even the sheer volume of different topics that we're talking about now puts a little bit more strain on it because, you know, I can think of any number of things that you and I haven't talked about, windmills on farmland or anything where you and I might disagree. And every time we disagree, it puts a little bit more strain on that friendship.
Yeah, it certainly can. And it also, though, again, it kind of – it's maybe that double-edged sword – the disagreement, though, can also be the way in which you and I are pursuing truth.
Exactly.
Which is how – and can fortify. It depends on how we handle the disagreement, right?
Right. You know, and I think that's part of the importance, I think, of reading philosophy, of studying philosophy, is learning how to, I think, manage – differences of opinion.
Yes.
Through conversation, through dialectic, through the you know, exchange of two opinions with the idea of getting to a higher truth that neither of you might have started from. That's kind of the value of studying philosophy a little bit and reading some of the philosophers and looking at how they've kind of gone through and digested differing opinions on a common subject.
Yeah, learning how to the study of philosophy trains one to seek the truth, value and appreciate the truth as one of our foundational core values, such that we would have the kind of humility that once we see, say, an argument or evidence that's better than the one we're currently holding, we would be what? Willing to change our minds,
right,
in pursuit of the truth.
Exactly. And we're going to do exactly that in a second. We're going to bring on a friend of the show. He's been on the show before, Dr. Kevin Vost, and he's written a book where he's done exactly that on the topic of friendship. He's taken the opinions of four different philosophers and he's kind of used them to sort of expand the notion of friendship through the ages by juxtaposing their opinions and hopefully by coming to a little bit higher truth.
Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and after that, we'll return to the Catholic Cave to take a deeper look at friendship and how it actually goes beyond clicking on somebody's Facebook page. We'll be back with more of the Cave right after this.
When the road looks rough ahead and you're miles and miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your old past said, boy, you got a friend in.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest? Or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a website, CatholicRadioIndy.org, with access to great Catholic resources, including podcasts of all our local programming. Podcasts that have been downloaded from all 50 states and over 40 countries on 6 continents. Yes, we are Catholic Radio Indy, but thanks to your support, we're taking the gospel of Christ to the ends of the earth. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
When you're tired of doing life alone, come back here. We enjoy the company. We hope you do too. Better together. Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, and we are delighted to welcome back into the cave our good friend, Dr. Kevin Vost. Welcome back to the cave, Dr. Vost.
Thanks so much for having me, gentlemen.
Well, I want our audience to know that you may have heard Dr. Vost before, but probably familiar with the work. If you're not, you should be. He's a Catholic author. You've got tons of books out there. That's why you're on today. We're going to talk about your latest book, but you're a speaker, you're a professor. You're a radio guest, like today, and of course, people can catch on EWTN as well. And we're super excited to talk to you about your latest book, which is, I think it's such an important topic. It's The Four Friendships from Aristotle to Aquinas. Da, 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 da. Every time we say Aquinas, we just have to have a little sound effect to that. We love Aquinas, of course, and Aristotle and everyone in between. So, Dr. Vost, tell us a little bit about your latest book. What's what are you aiming at with it?
Sure, you know, one of my greatest joys is I mentally blow that horn when I hear Aquinas too, because such a fan of Aquinas. It was his writings that brought me back into the church after being away for decades. And one of the things I so love about Thomas Aquinas is that, you know, he brings the heights of wisdom. He pulls all the great ideas that came from our Greco-Roman tradition, but then he fulfills them with the truths of our Judeo-Christian tradition. And one of the things I really love is the way that he did that to the writings of Aristotle on friendship. You know, Aristotle wrote very nobly about friendship in his Nicomachean Ethics, and Thomas later, you know, wrote a commentary on every line of that book, and he also incorporated a lot of those ideas when he talked about charity in the Summa Theologica. And years later, I discovered there's kind of a similar parallel, completely independent, where these classical writings of the Roman Cicero were adopted centuries later, Christianized by a little-known saint, probably St. Aelred of Rivaux, a Cistercian, from one century before St. Thomas Aquinas the 12th century. So for several years, I kind of had an idea in my mind in the back burner. I'd love to tell this story about two great Christian saints adapted and Christianized the two greatest pagan writings on friendship.
That's fantastic. I we're going to have to unpack that a little bit, because I was not aware of that connection to St. Alred, and we'll have to talk about that a little bit too. But maybe start with what this, maybe define for us, or give us an idea of what you mean, what these authors have meant by the term friendship, and why that arrested your attention.
Sure, you know, and I'll start here with the first in historical time there, Aristotle, and of course, you know, as philosophy buffs know, he was a student of Plato, who was so strongly influenced by Socrates. So we had this very early, you know, birth of this wonderful philosophy that Aristotle was a part of. And in his book on the Nicomachean Ethics, where he talks about all, you know, kinds of aspects of virtues, later in books 8 and 9 of 10 of that work, he talks about friendship. And boy, does he look at it from every possible angle. He compares friendship to, you know, to what it is to be a citizen, friendship between states, friendships within families, within relatives, within people who belong to different clubs and organizations, just every possible angle. But he's probably most famous for what he characterizes three kinds of friendships. And the first he called friendships of pleasure. And these are how, you know, we associate with people because we bring each other pleasure. It's, you know, very common in childhood. We enjoy playing baseball together or doing other things. We form these friendships based on the pleasure we can get from other people. The second kind, he calls friendship, of use or utility. We tend to become friends with people who are helpful to us, and you know, that we are helpful to them. And we might see this, you know, going through schools, we form study groups or at the office or even teammates on a team. There are various ways that, you know, we find each other useful, so we kind of tend to hang out with each other and form associations. But Aristotle said, but the truest form of friendship, he called friendship of excellence or friendship of virtue. And this is a friendship where our focus is not so much on what that other person can do for me. You know, can he bring me pleasure? Is there some way I can use him? But what can I do for that friend? And how can we grow together in virtue, seeking the really highest things? So this highest form of friendship, this virtuous friendship, is where you consider that other person like as another self. And you're just as interested in doing good things for them as having them doing good things for you. So that's kind of the foundation there in Aristotle. And I see this idea was carried on a little bit later in one of the Stoics, Seneca. And he advised a young friend of his, he said, you shouldn't go, you know, seeking friends to find someone who can, you know, take care of you in your time of need or sit by you at your sickbed. He said, you should seek out people so you can go to them in their time of need, so you can sit by them in their sickbed. So in my mind, you know, there's just this very noble pagan tradition of a friendship based on considering that other person as another self.
You know, the thing I like about Aristotle, particularly on friendship, is he's so practical. I think people get this idea of Aristotle kind of being a little bit withdrawn, a little bit inaccessible, and particularly on his writings with friendship, he's practical. He's full of advice. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we can glean today on how to build friendships, how to maintain our friendships, and who we ought to have friendships with.
Oh, absolutely. I'm so in agreement there. There's just so much, you know, just a wealth of information, of practical information, because he was a great observer, you know, of just the world around him, of what it meant to be a person in within a city, to have a group of friends, to grow up with a certain group of people, to, you know, to be in a family. He talks just really beautifully about love and friendship within families. In a sense, his highest ideal is that disinterested love that a mother has for a child. He even writes about, you know, a mother will so love a child that even if that child should be taken away from them, they're still, their greatest hope is just going to be that that child will prosper. So they're willing to even sacrifice their own relationship with the child if they can know that that child is going to, you know, going to prosper in their life.
You know, one of the things I found helpful was his comparison of different types of friendships, particularly among unequals, with different forms of government. And that was fascinating, and it was, I think, very helpful to think through, you know, how the relationships within a family resemble either a monarchy or a democracy. So, you know, a government that's based on basically merit and who's kind of most skillful at certain things. And then, you know, also then a democracy that, you know, these relationships very much resemble how we relate to each other within a state.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in a sense, he considered, you know, personal ethics as a branch or a part of politics, that it all kind of fits together. You know, from our one-on-one relationships, even in sense to our relationship to ourselves, to our one-on-one relationships, to our families, to the broader realms, including, yeah, entire, you know, political bodies of people. So it's just amazing the way he integrates it. As you mentioned, too, he goes into great depth about this idea of friendships between a superior and inferior, you know, a person with a more status, maybe an older person, a person with more to give in a sense, who befriends a younger person or a needier person. What is their proper relationship there? And it's really, you know, it's really elegant the way that he works all the implications to this. And he does them, too, by comparing and contrasting the different kinds of friendships. So just for one quick example there, those friendships of use or utility, he said when these are formed with people who don't have the high virtues, who aren't really concerned about each other's good, conflicts tend to arise. Because a person who's more helpful to another person says, boy, they should really be grateful to me, right? Look at all I've done for them. You know? And there's this tendency, right, too, for the person who gets help to say, well, of course, he has so much. He should be giving me. Why doesn't he even give me more? You know, so these kind of misunderstandings we do see, too, when our friendships are based, you know, on pleasure and use and not on virtue the way they really should be.
Yeah, you get out of balance very quickly where you have those feelings of resentment, you know, begin to crowd out feelings of gratitude. And then the next thing you know, you have hard, you know, kind of hard feelings between each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And Aristotle says, too, those highest friendships, they do also incorporate pleasure and utility, because we do have, sure, pleasure being with friends of virtue, and we are happy to help them. Just we don't help them with the necessary expectation they're going to help us back, you know, in equal measure.
So a lot's been written about kind of the crisis of friendship in the modern age. I mean, there was Bowling Alone, I think, was one of the kind of classic texts. And
are you following me again on the weekends,
Mark? Right.
I think I got a court thing that says you're not supposed to be doing that.
Right. And so I guess reading what you were writing about Aristotle on friendship, I had the thought, when we're having difficulties having, especially the highest form of friendship, those virtuous friendships, is this a crisis of, is this kind of a continuation of a crisis of friendship, which is sort of its own entity and its own problem? Or is this related to a crisis of virtue? Because there's been a lot written about that as well. You know, how do those two relate, I guess, sort of our difficulties in making friends and then our just, I think, kind of disintegrating sense of virtue that we have within our culture?
Well, yeah, that's an excellent question, because, you know, Aristotle, you know, at one point he said, well, these virtuous friendships he talk about, the pinnacle of friendships, he says they're pretty rare. And why are they rare? He said because there's very few people who really attain a high degree of virtue. You know, so the idea is that most of us, you know, will become, if we're inordinately selfish and self-seeking, if we haven't developed the kind of virtues that make us want to reach out to others, it's going to be harder to form these friendships. We're not going to be as interested in doing it. We're not going to know how to do it. I love the example you gave, too, from that the book Bowling Alone that came out around the year 2000. That did, you know, it wasn't just about bowling. Of course, he actually did talk about bowling, too. You know, the author was talking about the way all kinds of associations within the United States, voluntary groupings of friends belonging to political parties, being active in various organizations, had tended to diminish as we became more involved in our private experiences, such as watching television, and then now in our time, you know, through the internet and these telephones becoming absorbed, you know, in technology. But one thing that really hit me in that Bowling Alone, when he was actually talking about bowling, you know, just one little tiny aspect of it, but he talked about going to a bowling alley where people were bowling on teams, except the place was full of television sets. And between their turns, they wouldn't, you know, talk and joke and razz each other. They were watching TV. You know, so we have this phenomenon in our time that sometimes even when we're together, you know, we're not really there for each other. We're absorbed in our technology.
Well, that's an excellent point. And if you just are tuning in to the Catholic Cave, our guest, once again, is Dr. Kevin Vost. He's got a new book. He's a prolific Catholic author, speaker. And your new book is called The Four Friendships from Aristotle to Aquinas. And we've been talking about three of them, which are friendships based on pleasure, utility, or helpfulness, as well as now this understanding of friendship for a kind of excellence, human excellence involved. But the title of the book is four, and I'm only up to three. So help me out, Dr. Vost. What's Well, which one am I missing?
Okay, yeah. It actually, yeah, for the actual, where I get the title, The Four Friendships, that is a bit of a play on word. The four friendships I'm talking about are the four individual bodies or writings on friendships of, number one, Aristotle, number two, Cicero, number three, St. Elred, and number four, St. Thomas Aquinas.
Gotcha!
So those are the four friendships, the four kind of overlapping writings. And there's also kind of a unique sort of two sort of metaphorical friendships there. You know, Aristotle talked about friends as being, you know, one soul and two bodies. It's kind of an ancient, you know, saying of the Greek world there that friends are that close. And it interested me to find that St. Thomas Aquinas, in some sense, was that kind of person with Aristotle. You know, he learned so much from Aristotle, you know, really glorified it and Christianized it. In some sense, you could call them one soul and two bodies, in that their thoughts were so aligned in so many ways. And then I found the same with Cicero and St. Elred of Rivaux. When this St. Elred of Rivaux wrote his book on spiritual friendship in the 1100s, he incorporated about a third of the text of Cicero's writings on friendship in the first century B.C., you know, just openly doing it, quoting him and acknowledging him, but then just moved so far beyond it, because saying that though he admired the work of Cicero, when he became a Christian, that he said that nothing had the same savor for him unless it was touched by the sweetness of Christ and the salt of the sacred scriptures. So he takes Cicero's wonderful writings on friendships and says, well, now, what now have we learned about friendship since we have come to know Christ and we've become immersed in the scripture? So he then, you know, Christianizes Cicero in the way that Thomas did Aristotle in the writings on friendship. So to me, it's just a fascinating story. And a little sidelight here. Thomas Aquinas lived 100 years after Aelred. And, of course, Thomas Aquinas' knowledge was encyclopedic. He seemed to know about all there was to know in his time. But it does not appear that he was aware of St. Elred and his writings. And there's a reason for that. He was a Cistercian. It appears that his main books had very little circulation at first. So my thought is, oh, goodness, what if Aquinas had also known Aelred's writings? It would be just fascinating to see what his take would have been on those.
Yeah, and it would have been fascinating to have had the two of them in the same room, you know, discussing it. I always
another reason to get to heaven, Mark.
Exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, keep praying to him.
Right, exactly. We need some masses said for me, I'll tell you that.
But, yeah, I always like to picture how these great thinkers would interact with each other.
Yes.
And so, in a lot of ways, that's what you've done with your book. You've put these great thinkers together and allowed them to kind of interact, you know, through the format that you've laid out of kind of laying out their original thought and then going beyond that and kind of commenting on it a little bit. Let's go back a little bit and talk about Cicero. Now, Cicero, when he was talking about friendship, he focused in on harmony, which is an odd way in my mind to think about friendship.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this, you know, he was a first century B.C. Roman orator and statesman, a very powerful man, I think twice the consul or one of the greatest, highest leaders there in Rome, an orator, an attorney, and had friendships with these really grand and glorious men. And one of the famous Roman statements came from historian Sallust. He said, you know, friends are people who basically like and dislike the same things. So he focuses on this harmony, that we're after the same goals. And another part of that was that friends are the people that we can share our secrets with, because we have the same desires, you know, and for each other. We wouldn't betray each other. We value the same things. So that was one of his key points there. In fact, when I kind of summarize these four friendships just in one word, I call Aristotle's the virtuous friendship and Cicero's the harmonious, because he did focus in so much on that harmony. And the way he writes about it, in fact, for all four of these men, is very, very different. Aristotle's writings on friendship and the Nicomachean Ethics, we think, might even come down as like lecture notes from his students. But when Cicero wrote his book on friendship, also called the Laelius, it's done in the form of a dialogue. This actual Roman historical figure, Laelius, is asked by two sons-in-laws to talk about friendship when Laelius' greatest friend, Scipio, has just died. So that's what prompts him. The idea is that a friend is prompted by his sons-in-law to talk about friendship after the loss of his dearest friend. So it's really, really kind of magnificent. And Cicero talks about the way that he and Scipio had this harmony of friendship, and it just, you know, delves into all kinds of aspects of friendship, you know, in that dialogue.
It's a very platonic way to go about discussing a topic. You know, Plato had this idea that none of us can ever really get to the complete truth. We can only build upon each other. And so nobody philosophizes alone. You have to have somebody else there. And you know, Cicero kind of follows that with setting up the dialogue. But there's an aspect of friendship even to that idea that you're not even going to be able to discuss something like friendship or love or community or any of these ideas unless you have a friend to talk about it with.
Oh, exactly right. You know, Cicero was strongly influenced by Plato, and we have this great tradition of seeking truth together with friends. Aristotle talks about this too, that it was one of the things that friends do. They discuss things with each other. They seek truth. They try to help each other grow in virtue. So that's right. You know, one of the functions of friends, you know, is to help each other grow virtuous through the give and take, through honest conversation, through sharing, you know, deepest thoughts.
Now, you had mentioned earlier that St. Alred of Reval had Christianized Cicero's thought. What did he bring to Cicero through kind of, I guess, a Christian lens?
Yeah, that's interesting. He did this to Cicero, and I'll also even start with a little basis in Aristotle here. Aristotle, in a very interesting section of his Nicomachean Ethics on Friendship, says, you know, we want the best for our friend, like they're another self. He said, but would we want our friend to become a god? You know, and this is in the ancient, you know, Greek pagan mind of the possibly becoming one of these, of the pantheon of gods. And Aristotle said, no, he wouldn't want that greatest good for them, because then they'd no longer be a self like us. So there really wouldn't be a possibility of being friends if that friend had become a god. You know, and yet we see in Aelred now the irony of, we learn that God himself had come down to earth, taken human form, and called us to be his friends. So what an amazing, you know, difference and transformation there. So in a sense, well, not in a sense, but just blatantly, Aelred bases his writings on the friendship of Christ. He says he wants us to examine, you know, friendships, you know, in, through, and with Christ. So Christ becomes the whole new basis now, raising this to an entire level. How in being friends with each other, we're doing this through our friendship with Christ. He even starts his book on spiritual friendship, you know, in a dialogue format too, by saying, you know, here we are, you and I, and I hope a third Christ is here, you know, in our midst. So amazing transformation there. Now he's going to focus on Christ, and he's going to pull in the Scripture to give us wonderful insights from the Old and New Testaments about friendship itself in a very transformative way.
See, Tim, as much as you might want it, it would not be healthy for our friendship if I became a god.
True. Yeah. Hey, Dr. Vost, I'm wondering, to pivot the conversation just a little bit in a different direction, mm-hmm. You know, we mentioned technology a little bit earlier in the program. What's your perspective on, you know, Facebook friendship and social media and the kind of that sort of confederation of social bonds? Bond might be too strong a word for some of these, but what's your how is social media and technology affecting friendship?
The social media, you know, it is. I mean, it's clearly a two-edged sword there. I know I remember, you know, when it first came out, people were like, wow, now I can contact these old friends and school friends and people across the country I hadn't seen in ages. What a wonderful thing, you know, to form some new connections that way. But it seems that over time, of course, you know, we've had a tendency to where it replaces our face-to-face friendships as more and more time is spent on these, you know, virtual friendships. And oftentimes, instead of focusing on that friend, we're always focusing on, you know, well, what can I tell people about me today? You know, so I think there's ways that it can be very harmful if we're not careful. It can, you know, pull us away from the face-to-face friendships. And I think another form of technology, we really see this, is in our telephones, you know. It's mm-hmm. gone from something sitting on a desk or hanging on a wall to something that is, I wasn't saying people's pockets at all times, but I'm seeing more and more, it's not in a person's pocket. You know, it's in their hand. It's almost like we become cyborgs, you know, connected to these
right.
things. And I think, you know, that has some real dangers. Just even like young people, we've seen this tendency with the cell phones that all of a sudden now young people can call others, each other at all hours. But it didn't take long before even the phone calls decreased significantly amongst all ages, and especially the young, as texting came about. Mm-hmm. So we also saw an increasing depersonalization from talking to a person, you know, face-to-face to at least hearing their voice to just typing little, you know, typing things back and forth to each other without that, you know, that unique interpersonal dimension that comes from hearing a person's voice.
You also brought up in your book the aspect of technology kind of, I guess, muddling the pot as far as the sources of friendship. You know, whether this is a friendship based on pleasure, based on, you know, utility, you know, the common things that you kind of, I guess, use each other for to a certain extent, or a more virtuous type of friendship, that the technology tends to kind of muddle that. And so we kind of lose sight of sort of where these friendships arose and what type of friendship it is.
Yeah, I do think that's true. And, you know, and with the idea of the three different kinds of friendships there, when Aristotle talked about them, he even said, should these friendships of pleasure or use even be called friendship? And he said, well, they're imperfect friendship, but yes, they do have some element there that we're together, there's some positive benefit coming from it, but we need to keep in mind that they can be stepping stones to deeper forms of friendship. You know, those friendships that are based just because we can be helpful to a person in the office, or we share the same, you know, interest with another friend to go do some sport or music or something. You know, we can look for opportunities to grow deeper friendships in those. And I think kind of the same is there with the technology. I mean, through some of these connections made through technology, perhaps we can grow truer, deeper friendships. But the hazard is that we become, you know, so absorbed in these many superficial relationships that our time and interest and energy is taken away from forming those few deeper relationships that really matter.
Well, that's an observation I've had, and I'm glad you've commented on there, Dr. Vost. And that is, it seems like one of the things that I think the smartphones are eroding our capacity to develop deep relationship is it makes us kind of twitchy, because it's like especially as I look at younger generations, it's like every couple of minutes they have to look at the phone. I mean, the cycle at which they're to seeing if there's an update, if there's something new. And then also we've become hyper responsive to people, where if a loved one sends you a text message, the clock starts ticking and you better answer that thing. Really, you better one, notice that you got it. And two, you better respond very, very quickly. Meaning like if you let like sometimes 15 minutes go by or a half hour, the other person starts to worry about you. And I just think about when I was growing up, my parents, you know, I don't tell old stories, but I mean, I was, you know, I'd be out with my best friend, you know, we're 12 years old, and we would literally, you know, leave the house Saturday morning at like 9 a.m. or earlier, whenever we got kicked out of the house. They would have no idea where we were, and we would just, and it was just come home when it gets dark. And that was it. We'd be gone, and we'd be out in the woods or whatever, you know, we'd go hike 10 miles or whatever around town. And my parents had no idea where we were, and they didn't really worry about it either. So I'm not saying that's the ideal situation either, but there's something between being able at 12 years old to disappear for 10 hours versus now as an adult, I'm expected to respond in minutes. I have to have like I have to have complete availability to people, but because I have a smartphone. Oh, and that pertains to employers too.
Yes, yeah, they're going to expect a response, and I know what you mean. I thought it myself. I was able to thankfully retire from full-time work a couple years ago, and have had more time to slow down and reflect and think about things. And it occurred to me that I got to that point. My cell phone was always with me. I didn't want to miss anything. You know, I wanted to instantly respond. What if I'm asleep and somebody calls and wants to do an interview the next morning? And boy, I've missed that. You know, I'm going to better be ready here. You know, you get all that sense of urgency. And then it occurred to me, I was 45 years old before I ever had a cell phone. And I was kind of content and happy in my life at that point. And I think, you know, but now it does have its uses for sure. I especially love it when I travel. I'm in another city. I can, you know, contact my wife. There's definitely positive elements there. But it's so easy to become overcome by them and not to see the need to back off a little bit. And that first point you say, too, about, you know, always feeling needed to check it. You know, as my background in psychology, I wasn't the biggest fan of the behavioral psychology, that if it just looks at us entirely as creatures of, you know, reflex and stimulus and response. But there's some tendencies there. We do tend to act that way. You know, the people in the gambling with the one-armed bandits and the machines know that we're very responsive to what they call, you know, intermittent reinforcement. we're going to do things. If we do things and every once in a while we get a positive response, we're more likely to keep on doing them because we never know when that positive response is going to hit. And so, yeah, that's what we've become now with our emails, with our texts, with our cell phones. We're just kind of trained ourselves to be constantly checking. And I think it's something that, you know, it's not a good thing. We ought to, you know, become more aware of that and try to wean ourselves from that instead of kind of like, you know, looking for these constant little hits of electronic connection. You know, slow down and take some time and think about how we can have some more meaningful face-to-face connections with the people that really matter to us.
Yeah, I think you're very right. The immediate gratification and that intermittent reinforcement of us constantly checking our phones, etc. In a lot of ways, that has become the main event of social media, email, not the connection with the person on the other end, not the friendship that's there. And ironically, I think it's led to a state of great loneliness.
Oh, that's your
people.
Other book.
Exactly. I was just going to bring that up.
We're going to run out of time, but tell us a little bit about that book, too.
Yeah, you've done a lot of thought about loneliness.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. It just happened. This friendship book is one that was on the back burner of my mind for several years. And it was as I was writing this book that I was asked by another publisher to write the book about loneliness. I thought, how interesting. You know, what dovetailing topics there, almost kind of like two sides of the coin, you know. The fewer friendships we have, the more likely we are to feel lonely, and one of the greatest remedies for loneliness, of course, is friendship. So they're intertwining topics. And if I can hark back one last time on the technology, not to totally bash it, but just to kind of tie in the idea. I've always loved weightlifting. It's my biggest hobby. And I've done it for more than 40 years now. I've worked at gyms as an instructor. I've always worked out at gyms, you know, been at many, many over the years. And when I was younger, you know, in the 1970s and 80s, a gym was a very easy place to make connections with other people. In fact, I met my wife there in 1983. But now, partly because of this technology, a good portion of people walk around connected. There's plugs in their ears. You know, they're connected to some kind of device. It's not as easy to strike up a conversation. Or the machines themselves, the cardio machines, may have televisions in front of them. So in some ways, you know, we have to be careful when our technology just blocks our ability to interact in simple ways.
Yeah, I noticed that with housework around my house was as my daughters, when my daughters were younger, they didn't have the technology. And so when we would do housework, it was much more of a family activity, a lot of interaction, a lot of talking. And as they got older, they naturally wanted to listen to music. Nothing wrong with that at all. But it disrupted that familial interaction while we were doing housework together. Suddenly, you know, they were kind of isolated in doing their task. Their sisters were isolated in doing their tasks. And that interaction went away just because of those little plugs that went into their ears.
Yeah, exactly. The difference it can make, and I'll get back to that bowling alone again once more, that book. When you talk about the impact of television and decreasing our socialization with each other, it wasn't, you know, just, oh, television's a bad thing, don't do it. What they found that led to the decrease in relationships was when people just watched television like aimlessly for vast amounts of time, just sitting there, you know, flipping and seeing what was there, as opposed to people who just watched it on purpose. They had a particular show they wanted to watch, so they would go and watch that show and then turn it off and do other things. And they also found, which reminds me of your story of the children and housework, is that they found the more televisions inside a house, the less interaction there was within the family members, even in terms of even watching television together, of course, because now we're even doing that separately. So I think, you know, with all the wonders and marvels of technology, we do need to keep ourselves open to the fact, what way is that impacting me? Or in what ways is it impacting my family? And are there ways that I can moderate that?
Well, we've been speaking with our friend and companion, Dr. Kevin Vost, about his latest book called The Four Friendships, from Aristotle to Aquinas. Highly, highly recommend picking up a copy of that. And you have so many other books. One other one I want to mention, because it's my favorite of yours so far, is The Porch and the Cross. Kind of drawing again from kind of ancient Greek wisdom, and then helping kind of baptize it, if you will, with Christianity, and helping us see those connections. I'm just so appreciative of your work and you coming in and to the cave today, Dr. Vost. And hey, if we want to pick up a book or see what else you're up to, what's the best way for listeners to follow what you're doing and maybe engage?
Sure. My own website is drvost.com, just drvost.com. I don't sell the books through that site, but they're described there. And there's a contact box if people would like to contact me.
Fantastic. And what's on your radar next?
I hope you're going to like this one. It just went to the editor. It's at the Institute Press. It is called How to Think Like Aquinas.
Uh-huh. Oh, wow. At last. Yeah. At last. Yes. Yeah. We're going to need that. A couple of copies.
I can see it already. Tim is going to buy that for me for Christmas so that I stop thinking like Hegel.
Correct. Correct. He's, once in a while, he's a Heidegger, too. Dr. Vos, you got to help. You got to come back real soon.
that's interesting phenomenology or whatever. Right.
Exactly. Well, again, thank you so much for coming back to the Catholic Cave. God bless for all you do to promote the love of the Holy Catholic faith and being such a great witness yourself.
Oh, many thanks to you guys. God bless.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You know us as Catholic Radio Indy, but we're so much more than just radio. We're a ministry reaching out to Central Indiana and beyond. We have information available about what's happening in parishes here in the Hoosier Heartland, as well as access to the latest from Rome, plus apologetics and authentic Catholic teaching. We are your source for 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Catholic Radio Indy and CatholicRadioIndy.org.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with my good friend Timothy O'Donnell and my good friend Kent Blandford, and we just got done talking with a friend of the show, Dr. Kevin Vost, about friendship. So
friend.
That was a great conversation. And one of the phrases that comes to mind after talking with Dr. Vost is the idea of spoiling the Egyptians. And St. Augustine talked a little bit about this, that when the Israelites came out of Egypt, they took all of the gold and all of the wealth and everything. God said, you know, take all of the Egyptian stuff with you. And so Augustine applied that to pagan philosophy, taking the riches of the pagan philosophy and bringing it along with us as we become Christian. And that's exactly what St. Alred did. That's exactly what St. Thomas Aquinas did with Cicero and Aristotle, not just on friendship, but on other topics as well.
Yeah, and I think that's the great service that Dr. Vos has done with this book and some of his other books, is that that's not an easy project to do. It's not easy to go pick up Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics and also read Cicero on friendship and Aquinas on friendship and Alred on friendship, and then put all that together.
Right, synthesize it all into one whole. And
make it accessible and interesting.
The other thing he did with that book is it's in a slightly different format than a lot of other books that you read these days, in that he pretty much puts a summary of the original thought of the original thinker, and then the next chapter, you know, he adds to it and comments on it, and I love that format. It's a little bit more, I would almost say a little bit more along the lines of what some of the medieval thinkers did with texts. But it's not a format that we're as familiar with today. And I appreciate Dr. Vos kind of bringing that back with this book. Hopefully it'll catch on for other authors.
Yeah, and we just touched on a little bit. Since we had him on last, he had written two books. I mean, Dr. Vos writes a lot of books. He's full steam ahead, as they say. And the other book we're talking about is called A Catholic Guide to Loneliness. And I like the way he was talking about how these two kind of loneliness and friendship, you know, kind of fit together. And so we'll have to explore that a little bit more. But I know there's one of the, have had other guests in the cave, Mark, this idea of, and I'm going back, this idea of there's kind of an anxiety that's out there, right? There's it seems in the culture there's this uneasiness that's out there, and I think part of what's contributing to that and to the deterioration of culture is this moving away from authentic friendships, and not even, I mean, I don't even think we are schooling or educating our students on what friendship is, much less how to engage and foster and have an ideal of what friendship really could be. much less than pursue it in your own life.
Yeah, and I think even further, we're creating significant barriers, particular younger ages for kids.
The technology.
Well, the technology is one of them, but I think institutionally, you know, I think within schools, I think the way schools are set up, it's creating more difficulty for kids to form those friendships at school. I think with sports, the way that we do some of the activities and things outside of schools, it's a little bit harder to forge those friendships between teammates, etc. Just the way travel teams are set up and rec leagues are set up and you know, kind of moving from one league to another league to another. You don't get this idea of constant teammates. I mean, I remember playing soccer as I was growing up. You know, I was on the same team with the same group of kids for 2, 3, 4 years. Now, really, until you get to the high school level, that doesn't happen. I mean, you're just kind of bounced from one team to the next team to the next team to the next team. So I think there's some things like that that we're doing. The neighborhoods that we live in, the way our neighborhoods are set up, you don't see kids outside playing together anymore, partly because we've immersed them in so many different activities that they don't have time. But also, I think the protective instinct. You know, you were talking about how when you were growing up, your parents – you know, you would go out and play with your friends for 10, 12 hours at a time without parental intervention. Now, right. I'm not letting my kids out of my sight for a second. So,
right.
Well, I don't think that applies just to the kids. I mean, look at the way we design houses these days. Houses, when we were young, had front porches. Now they have back decks. We've gone from the communal going
That's exactly
out, sitting
it.
On the front porch. You know, you see the neighbors across the street, everybody gets together on somebody's front porch. Now, everybody's in their backyard, on their deck, with that privacy fence all the way around. We've cocooned ourselves.
Yeah, it goes a little bit back to what we were talking about a few shows ago with Patrick Deneen, that you know, we've become this autonomous individual that we've always idealized and dreamed we should become, and we've lost a lot in the process, including I think the foundations for building healthy friendships.
Yeah, that's if we're not careful, the whole project of friendship is really at risk, and we were. You know, tongue-in-cheek, talking about Facebook and some of these other ways in which we had these loose confederations of friends. But it's, you know, there does seem to be some emerging both social science and neurological science that the way we're interacting with technology is, it's not just changing the way we're thinking, it's rewiring our brains to a certain extent. And I'm not sure, I know I don't have a good handle on, well, what exactly are all the implications of that when I'm caught up in Facebook and it's something you mentioned, Mark, I'm more interested in how many likes I get than I am about the person who is sending the like.
Right. When we were talking with Dr. Vost about technology, one thing I was thinking about is, you know, particularly Cicero focuses on the commonality of the will that forges friendships. You know, we're kind of interested in the same things. We desire the same things. We have the same objects that our lives are kind of pursuing. And, you know, the technology interrupts that as well. It because our focus becomes the technology itself, becomes the medium of communicating, we lose sight of the fact that there's, I think, a world outside where these friendships are directed towards something else. And so people lose, I mean, part of it's also the mode of communication. People lose the ability, I think, to forge a friendship beyond the commonality of, well, you're on Facebook and you know, the sharing and all of that. You know, the technology itself becomes the focus of the friendship.
Right, right. Well, and I think just our time on technology crowds out our time for friendship. All that time on, again, I like Netflix, I like Facebook to keep, but all that time I'm spending in that space is time I'm not pursuing authentic relationships with other people. And I think with that, that's where we're going to have to leave it.
That is all the time we have.
Can't we just got started?
So my recommendation, next time you decide to sit down and listen to The Cave, invite a friend to join you. That's the way we're going to leave it for this week. Until next week, I'm Kent Blanford along with Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. Until we see you again, may God bless.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.